The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
It's game day. Pump Site Geek ready to go. I'm guessing tonight we're going to see a couple of storylines on the NFL Network broadcast. I'm heading out there, so I won't see it, but I'm sure you will. Brad Sesmatt with you here doing our thing as we do every Monday through Friday on Sports 360 AZ, of course, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sesmatt, Facebook as well. A couple of things I'm very much looking forward to out at the stadium today and tonight. I'm guessing we're now, what, seven games in, the seventh game? It's Seattle, a team that the Cardinals have beaten at home. If the game's in Seattle, the Cardinals get run over like a freight train. Just, it's not even worth the fuel to drive to this stadium. But when Seattle comes here, for whatever reason, the Cardinals, they play very well against them. On the show, we'll be visiting in a couple of minutes. Brock Huard will join us later on in the program, ESPN college football analyst, talk show host in Seattle. We'll talk with him. We'll have Clark Judge with us, NFL insider, of course, all things NFL with Clark Judge on tonight's game. Jake Plummer scheduled to be with us. We can meet up with Jake. He is scrambling around today, so we're working on that as well. So Jake Plummer, Clark Judge, Brock Huard, as we do our thing, as always here on the show. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports. It's brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. It's coming up to the weekend. You can head up on there today. Be in the 50s, 60s, maybe. Down in the 40s and 30s. Pull on down the slots. Eat some great food. Watch the Cardinals game tonight. Be a part of the biggest, baddest brown fishing tournament. Why not? That's all at the Honda Resort and Casino. The Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. What a deal. What a bargain. So tonight, before we get to the game, Eric's Facebook question of the day, because it does involve Seattle. It does involve a lot of football this weekend. Here's E.
Yeah, we are hopefully not going to be sleepless in Seattle, Brad. Today's Facebook question is...
Yeah.
Busy football weekend. Seattle teams. One is in town. The other is coming down tomorrow. ASU is taking on Washington Saturday in Tempe. The question is, which team needs a win more near the midpoint of the season against our friends from the Northwest?
I don't like them.
The Cardinals
tonight?
They're
not my friends.
Yeah. Oh, they're nice people up there. The Cardinals tonight or the Sun Devils on Saturday? I'm curious to get your take on this because I really can't decide, and I always have an opinion one way or the other.
Well, I have an opinion on this. It's the Cardinals because here's the thing with ASU. Even if ASU loses tonight's game or Saturday's game, this is where next year's college football playoff will make a game like ASU-Washington more meaningful, okay? Not to say it's not meaningful this year, but if ASU loses to Washington, doesn't mean a darn thing for the Rose Bowl. Doesn't mean a thing. As random and as wild as that is, in the Pac-12 South, it's a non-conference game. Really, you're out of your division, non-divisional game. It's still Pac-12. And so ASU could lose to Washington Saturday. They could lose at Washington State next week or the following week, I should say. And they'd still be right in the middle of the race for the Rose Bowl. If the Cardinals lose this game to Seattle tonight, Seattle is in their division. You're not going to win when they go to Seattle. It's not even worth the jet fuel to fly up there. We saw the 58-0 pasting last year Seattle put on them. Every year the Cardinals go to Seattle, it's not pretty. We can sugarcoat it all we want. We can be, yay, go hometown team, our Cardinals rock, and all that stuff. No, they never win in Seattle.
Few teams, too.
Few teams win in Seattle. And so when you look at it, they've won, what, 8 of the last 9 against Seattle here. You beat Seattle here, you're at 4-3.
You're a game out of first place.
You're a game out of first
place. As ugly as this 3-3 start has been times.
And here's the other part to that. You play Atlanta the following week. I think you and I at the start of the year had Atlanta as a loss.
And the Texans
the following week. You look now at the midpoint of the season where Atlanta is. They've lost Julio Jones, their best wide receiver. Steven Jackson, their best running back, is scuffled. All right? That now has become a winnable game. Then you play Houston. I don't know. Houston's the biggest train wreck in all the National Football League. Matt Schaub's getting booed at home. He doesn't want to be on the field. They can't figure out how to stop people. I'm surprised they haven't fired their coach yet down there. So, Eric, you win this game over Seattle. You're 4-3. You're a game back. And the NFC, last time I checked, isn't anything great. Give me a great team. New Orleans looks like the best team. Yeah, they lost in the last seconds to New England. But really, if you go through the NFC East, let's just say NFC East.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. Dallas, is Dallas very good? Dallas scores a lot of points, can't stop anybody. They've had a bunch of injuries. Washington, Washington's nothing special. Philadelphia, they've got a quarterback issue. The Giants are winless.
And the Cardinals won't have to leave the state for a month because they have a couple home games sandwiched between a bye, and then I think they go to Jacksonville sometime next month. So now is the time if you're going to do it. I know it's tough. You're playing the Seahawks, but like you said, the Seahawks have not been good at all in Glendale, and they're just not the same team on the road.
So head over to Facebook.com. So did I talk you through this? Do you see my point? The ASU
you make
game,
valid points.
The ASU game,
but
it's fine.
But I could counter-argue it by saying ASU got through the brutal stretch. A lot of people think ASU was going to lose Saturday, although they are favored. If ASU wins Saturday, they are back in the top 25. Momentum heading into the second half of the season. Plus, when it comes down to tiebreakers, I know it's not a Pac-12 South game per se.
Yeah.
But at the end of the year, tiebreakers could decide it. And
that's valid.
You know.
That's valid, but here's the thing. If they lose to Washington, then it's just same old ASU. And I actually think there's some of that already creeping in. That's just another year where, we thought we'd have a good team, and we don't, and Will Sutton's kind of disappointing, and we had 50,000 there for Colorado. And
the verdict's still out.
Yeah.
I mean, just like Brad Edwards said yesterday, Notre Dame, that ASU was on the national platform against Notre Dame, and a lot of the national people were like, I'm not impressed with
this. Yeah, I'm not seeing this. I don't care. I don't care what their helmets look like. We can sit here behind microphones and say, man, those helmets are so cool. And then you lose, and you get beat, and you play poorly. Who cares? By the way, do you see Oregon's wearing pink? Have you seen the Oregon pink helmets yet today?
I have not, but I bet they're cool.
Oh, my gosh. In the last hour, Oregon announced that they're wearing pink helmets. Of course Oregon announced they're wearing pink helmets. They're Oregon. And they are so outrageous and over the top, but I love them. The whole pink thing is, it's overblown. I understand it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I'm not trying to put anything down on that. But I've had many people text me that how much can sports wrap their arms around causes and how much are they really giving? Okay? Larry Fitzgerald has a lot of money. There's a lot of genuine people. It's a serious issue. I've been impacted by it. But it's kind of like, in a strange sort of way, when I see people always want to wrap themselves around Pat Tillman and that there's a business side to it rather than, are you really in it for the right reasons? Oregon's going to do breast cancer awareness with their pink helmets. They're going to make a boatload of money in merchandise. That's just the way it is. And they're going to raise awareness. That's fine. But there's other ways to go about it. The roof's going to be open tonight for those of you that want to, that are into that stuff. Here is Carson Palmer on having to take shots against Seattle's talented secondary. They're going to have to do that tonight.
You got to be physical with them. You know, they're going to grab and hold, and they're going to play very physical. They're very long. You know, you got to fight back. And you know, if they're going to let guys play like they did last week and you know, let the grabbing go on and let it be a physical game, we've got to match their physicality and at times, you know, just win.
That's Carson Palmer there. The roof will be open. Tyrann Mathieu storyline. You will hear a ton about that tonight. A ton about Tyrann Mathieu. It's his only national appearance. And so they're going to play that story up to the nth degree. I hear Deion Sanders doing a sit down with Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu. It's a very good story. Three keys to tonight's game. You have the secondary of the Seahawks against the Cardinals receivers. You have Carson Palmer and his interceptions. I think Andre Ellington's kind of a factor in this too. He's been running the ball well. Here's Kurt Warner on the Seahawks.
Very good defense. We know they can run the football. Still think they have a lot of limitations in their passing game. If you took Russell Wilson's legs out of the mix, I think this team would struggle, you know, offensively to score points because they just don't have any dynamic playmakers right now in the passing game.
And there you go on the Cardinals game. That's tonight. The Peyton Manning versus Jim Irsay stuff. I read a terrific story today where Tom Moore, the Cardinals quarterback coach, was quoted in it about the work ethic of Peyton Manning. Jim Irsay is saying that the comments were taken out of context and all that stuff. When Peyton Manning goes in the Hall of Fame, is he going to acknowledge Jim Irsay? Now that's going to be a topic of conversation as we get towards this weekend's game. We'll talk all things NFL with Clark Judge here in a few minutes and also Brock Huard on that. Are we seeing a weakness in Peyton Manning? He didn't want to talk about Jim Irsay yesterday. Here's Peyton Manning on this whole Jim Irsay situation.
I don't have any answer for you on that or any comment on any of that.
That's it. Here is Peyton Manning on returning to Indianapolis this weekend.
There's no question it's unique. And I think, but, you know, as far as when you're in the meeting rooms and you're, you know, watching film, you know, I'm certainly familiar with some of the guys, but not many of them. There's a lot of guys on that team that could care less about my time there in Indianapolis, and a lot of guys on this team that could care less about my time somewhere else.
That's Peyton Manning. So, and Jake Plummer is going to join us here in a couple of minutes. So I think Jake's up there, and it's the Fiesta Bowl show, but I am going to ask him just a little bit about what's going on up there, because this story is just overriding everything. The Tom Moore part of the story, Tom Moore talked this week from the Cardinals' offices with Yahoo about how he worked with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning would finish a season, and they'd take a week off, and he and Tom Moore would meet at 6:30 in the morning on a Monday, a week after the season. And they would sit there and go through the first play of the first game. And they'd both have notepads. And they would go through that first play of that first game and break it down. And then they'd go through the second play of the first game of the first series and they'd break it down. And then they'd go through the third play. And on and on and on. They would go through the entire season, every play, every game, break it down, not just once. They'd talk about it, go through it. I mean, that's the type of guy that we're dealing with here. Is Jim Irsay trying to push through and get into Peyton Manning's head? Peyton Manning doesn't want to talk about this. Peyton Manning has done everything right when it comes to image and how he's structured his post-NFL career, business, all that stuff. So why would he want to get involved in this and play back and forth with Jim Irsay? I'm going to get to the baseball playoffs up next. Fiesta Bowl show with Jake Plummer. Always good to catch up with Jake. We're going to talk about the Pac-12, UCLA, quarterbacks in the Heisman race, Clemson, Florida State, all things college football. Jake always has something to say. At the bottom of the hour, all things NFL with Clark Judge. And much more. I'm Brad Susmat, White Mountain Radio. Of course, you can reach me on Twitter at Brad Susmat. We're with you Monday through Friday on our website, Sports 360 AZ. Sports 360 AZ. Thanks for joining us. It's time now for the Jake Plummer Show. Jake Plummer and the Fiesta Bowl. Brought to you by the Fiesta Bowl. Jake Plummer and the Fiesta Bowl, a winning combination. UCLA the next 2 weeks. Stanford, Oregon, on the road, UCLA ranked 9th in the nation. Okay, I asked Brad Edwards this from ESPN yesterday, Jake. If UCLA wins Stanford, Oregon, how high do they go? Could they get all the way to number 2, and would we have to start talking about them in the national title picture?
I guess so, because if they do beat Oregon, Oregon would be number 2, but if they, you know, first off have to beat Stanford, who was ranked number 5, and will probably, I don't know, you know, they could climb back into the top 10 very easily, but if UCLA doesn't allow Stanford to climb back in there by beating them and then beating Oregon, then you have to talk about them being at least in the top 3 teams just because of who they've beaten, especially on the road. And you look earlier at who they played, you know, they dismantled Nebraska in Lincoln. You know, they've had some quality wins, and those would be two big wins for the program and the kind of wins that vault a program up to the top. And also, you'd have to be talking Brett Hundley for the Heisman if that happens, I imagine, because in order for them to beat those two teams, he's going to have to play exceptionally well.
Yeah, and it's not that they're going to be picked, right? But I think now they have an opportunity, probably more so than any other team in the country, to put themselves in a spot. Because if Clemson and Florida State, those two are big-time teams regardless. And they're so close to the top, and they meet each other this weekend. But I don't see anybody else. Ohio State has nobody left on their schedule that is going to scare them at all. And you know, Alabama still has LSU. LSU can get back in the race, but they have the Southeast Conference title game. I just think UCLA, and that takes me over to Stanford. Is Stanford not as good as what people thought they were at the start of the season, based off of not just the Utah game, but even the week before, they didn't look all that great.
You know, I don't want to jump to conclusions on that. I think they got tested, and they obviously responded against Washington. You know, controversial call at the end there, but they won the game, tough game, and then they played a tough Utah team. And I think people don't understand how good Utah is. They're very well coached. Kyle Whittingham knows how to get his team ready, and the addition of Dennis Erickson has put that offense, given that offense some confidence, you know, and they kind of roll with their leader, Travis Wilson. I mean, that kid, mm-hmm. you know, they played extremely well the week before and, you know, didn't beat Washington, but he played on flu symptoms. He was sick all day, came out and showed to his team that he's a tough leader. And they're a good team, so don't discount Utah for what they did to Stanford. You know, Stanford is a quality team still. I think they'll bounce back, but they obviously have a very tough challenge with UCLA coming to town.
And Utah almost beat UCLA, played them very tough at home. Utah is yeah. U of A this week. We really don't know what U of A is all about at this point, other than they went to Washington and got smacked around pretty good. So I think from a Pac-12 standpoint, it's a very interesting time. The first BCS poll is out this Sunday. Are you one of those that is ready to get rid of the BCS and looking forward to next year? Does the BCS devalue the regular season? Does it enhance the regular season? What's your whole view on BCS stuff? Because it's right in the middle of the crosshairs this week, Jake.
Yeah, I would have preferred the BCS to go away years ago. You know, I don't like the way they do. They allow a computer to determine who is the best team and the highest ranked team. And you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist completely, but I do believe that there's more than just computers playing around with the points and putting the right teams in the championship game. You know, when you get to see Alabama LSU for a national championship, it's kind of like, okay, the rest of your conferences are playing for nothing. I'm going to be happy to see that go away and get to a playoff format eventually, even though, you know, who's controlling the playoff format? They named the chairman, and they're going to be, I don't know how many selection committee in there. And I just hope it's fair and you get some teams, some other conferences in there, and have an at-large every year, you know, whether it's going to be Fresno this year. You know, Fresno would be a fun team to see get in and play against some of these top teams. You know, Boise State fought for years to be relevant. You know, the BCS doesn't allow for that, but a playoff system would, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, you have Fresno State, you have Northern Illinois that's in the conversation. You know, Louisville has a terrific quarterback, and they don't have much left on their schedule, and somehow, some way, they're going to work their way in. The system has found a way to get some of those teams some exposure, but in this new format, I feel like they're going to continue to be pushed to the side. Maybe not initially, but I see your point on that, to have some of these cool teams get involved in, because the parity now across the board, I don't think Alabama's nearly as strong a team this year as they were last year. And there's some other teams that are starting to make a push in that direction. Namely, UCLA is one of those I'm keeping an eye on.
Well, definitely. I think that parity across college football is good for the landscape of the game. You see what it's done in the NFL. Obviously, there's some teams that year in and year out are weak, but there's a Kansas City Chiefs are 1-15 or 2-14, whatever they went last year, and now they're undefeated. So the talent is there, you know, when you go across these college teams, and it's a matter of, I think, being motivated to play for something. You know, how does Texas look so bad, and then they go and beat a pretty high-ranked Oklahoma team, I think an over-ranked team. But it's Texas. They have talent. It's just a matter of, like, you know, are your players motivated? Are they playing for something? And mm-hmm. You got these smaller schools now that for years were playing for just respect. And when you're playing for respect, it's a whole lot different than, you know, playing for the big glamour that, you know, the SEC teams, ACC teams get. You know, those Boise State teams for many years played hard for respect, and they earned it, and they got it, and now they're considered a great program, you know. And it'd be fun to see more teams get that. The parity is one thing with talent, but it's the parity of the money. The money is not across the board even. You know, the top programs get way more money, and the bottom ones are left to, you know, get their cast-offs and hopefully put something together.
Jake Plummer with us every week. Jake Plummer in the Fiesta Bowl winning combination. The Fiesta Bowl, of course, right in the middle of the mix, starting to look at teams, and the bowl season is getting closer and closer. Let's switch gears, and I want to throw some quarterbacks' names at you, and if you haven't seen enough of them, I get it. But NFL-ready and Heisman Trophy, two different things, or are they? Is the Heisman Trophy and NFL-ready? Can you separate those two?
You know, it's hard to say because you know, the style of play in college is so much different today than it was years ago. With there's always been those athletic QBs running the, you know, the spread and doing some things, but now it's become almost the norm where every team has it. And you know, the big one is Johnny Manziel going to be able to play in the NFL? Well, it all depends. Are there coaches in the NFL that are going to be able to coach Johnny Manziel? Give him the opportunities to do what he's been doing. So, you know, last year and this year, are there coaches that are willing to kind of go against tradition or maybe change their offensive scheme up in order to facilitate putting a player like him on the field that definitely needs to be on the field? Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy makes plays. Obviously, he makes great plays you rarely see. And there's a lot of those guys now in college. So NFL ready now is different. You don't get the Peyton Mannings as much that come out that are, you know, drop back, put their foot in the ground, go through your reads, and get the ball gone. You know, there's a few of those out there, but there's always there's a lot more of the hybrids now that are making themselves relevant.
Are we at a two horse race on the Heisman with Mariota and Manziel? Is that just it for this year?
I think it's too early to say that. Obviously those two have vaulted to the top. They're great players, but Taj Boyd has been doing some great things in Clemson. He's a solid day every day, man. He does what he needs to do for his team to win, and I think, you know, he's going to give those guys a run if he can pull off a big win this weekend. Jameis Winston, a freshman, I think he's got to be considered. But it all comes down, I think, this time of year to the wins, the quality wins.
Mm-hmm.
Get those big ones that are important, then that's what, you know, that vaults you into that Heisman talk. I think that it's always exciting to see who's going to step up, and you know, there's, like I mentioned earlier, Brett Hundley, he's got a chance here. If he, you know, if they beat Stanford and beat Oregon, I mean, we're going to be talking Brett Hundley, and it's UCLA, so he's got the glamour school that everybody, you know, knows about on the East Coast, and there's a chance he could get in there and do it. But he's got to win these big games and play well and fight for his team, which you know he's going to do, and that's why it's interesting to see what happens.
Give me a line or two on these two guys. Let's start with Teddy Bridgewater. Have you seen enough of him to see from college to pro and how he's going to translate?
Yeah, I've tried to catch him whenever they're on. You know, they're obviously their schedule's weak, and you don't know how good of a team they have. But he's their undisputed leader, and I think skill-wise and skill set, you know, he can do it all. He drops back, he reads down the field, he goes through progressions. In the pocket, he can stand and throw. When the pocket collapses, he can get out and make good decisions. You know, I think that's, you know, there's an obvious reason why he's the number one QB prospect, because across the board, it's not just Mel Kiper saying that. It's you know, pro scouts that are watching him and analyzing his game. And it'll be fun to see. He's not the biggest guy, which I like, because he kind of has a more frail, like not frail, but a smaller frame. And I just like his style of play. You know, they run a lot of deep boot fakes, and he sets up and he chucks the ball around the field. And you got to do that in the NFL, especially with the big receivers and the big weapons they have. And, you know, we'll see how it translates. But for now, I'm going to enjoy watching him, you know, play for Louisville.
Got about 45 seconds. Kevin Hogan at Stanford. I'm hearing some people that are trying to say another great Stanford quarterback, and then there's others that are saying they don't see it. What do you see out of Kevin Hogan at Stanford?
You know, he's only a sophomore, so, you know, it's interesting because, you know, everybody sees one guy that comes in as a, you know, freshman or a sophomore and then leaves for the NFL. I mean, this guy is going to be so much better next year and even better into his senior year, and I think eventually he'll get there. Right now he's a little raw.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to work a little on quicker release, getting the ball gone. But, you know, I think he's a great leader. And having those intangibles are, I think, more important at this stage than being polished and ready to show the scouts what you can do with your skill set. Being a leader, tough, you know, that's more important to me. But, you know, some scouts don't look for that.
No, there's no question about it. Good college football talk. As always, Jake, visit with you next week. Thanks.
Hey, Brad, thanks a lot, man.
Good visiting with Jake Plummer, as always. Jake Plummer in the Fiesta Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl and Jake Plummer, a winning combination. Jake Plummer with us every week, and we thank the Fiesta Bowl. On the other side, all things NFL on this Cardinal Day against Seattle with Clark Judge. All things NFL with Clark, and then Brock Huard's going to join us from up in the Pacific Northwest, ESPN's Brock Huard. He also has a daily show right around the Seahawks. Get a little bit further on the Hawks game tonight. I'm going to talk with him about Washington and ASU and some other college football stuff, too. That's later in the half hour with Brock Huard. Clark Judge is next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
React and interact to today's Pros to Preps question of the day at facebook.com/pros to preps.
It's very hard to see how anyone could think that I made a negative comment. I mean, you couldn't ask one player involved, that was consistently involved in about, that decade plus, about not being disappointed in winning more than one.
I don't have any answer for you on that or any comment on any of that.
It's Peyton Manning, Jim Irsay, Clark Judge, now all things NFL. Who's lying? Who's telling the truth here?
Peyton Manning's telling the truth. He really doesn't have anything to say because I think he was hurt by it. And I've known Jim Irsay for 25 years, and I think we're making a big deal about something here that he got himself into sort of unwittingly, but he got himself into it. Probably shouldn't have said it. Fact of the matter is, he's right. I mean, I'm sorry, he's right. I mean, they probably should have won more than one Super Bowl, and it is disappointing, you know, when you have Peyton Manning there to say, God, we couldn't have gotten more, but that's not to say that he didn't have a great career there. He did. I know how close or how much Jim Irsay felt about Peyton Manning. He picked a bad week to stick his foot in his mouth. So, as I said, you know, what he said probably shouldn't have been said, but the fact of the matter is, Peyton Manning, the one knock on the guy, is his playoff record, 9-11, and 7-1 and done.
Are we seeing a weakness in Peyton Manning not wanting to address this?
No, I don't think so. I think he's basically saying, listen, I'm above this. I'm not going to get in the fray. I know what I did there. I'm proud of it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get down in this thing. I think he also knows Jim Irsay. Listen, Brad, I'm sure you've dealt with Jim, too. He says some things that are bizarre. He tweets things that are even bizarre, more bizarre. So I look at this and I go, it came out the wrong way. He did say it.
Yeah, yeah.
Shouldn't have done it. And as I said, you know, let's move on.
And is Peyton Manning, because he has people around him that are really smart, he has positioned himself beautifully for when the NFL ends. And a lot of players don't do that. And he's very smart. He's got the corporate stuff figured out. He can walk in any TV network he wants. So why would he get himself in a little mudslinging here with an owner who says something stupid? And that's my thing, is this is calculated on Peyton Manning, too. It's not like he just showed up and said, I'm not going to address this. He had to bounce it off some people and say, let's not get involved in this.
Absolutely. This is a smart guy, and this is a guy who measures everything, and a guy who's had a very successful career on and off the field.
Yeah.
He sells merchandise like nobody in this league. So I think there's no question he thought about this, and, you know, when he says, I don't want to talk about it, and you know, addresses it as tersely as he did in those comments that you just aired, you know where he stands. I mean, he's telling you, I'm ticked off, all right? I'm not happy with it, but he's not going to say that because, as you're right, he's positioned himself beautifully. Why taint it by saying something he's going to regret or something that might not look as good as he might want it? I think Peyton Manning's smart to stay out of this. His coach has already made it clear what he thinks about it.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Polian's made it clear what he thinks about it. Yeah, it was stupid. Stupid to say, all right? And Peyton Manning has made that clear by not saying anything, and I think he was smart to do it.
Yeah, and Peyton Manning will throw for 700 yards and 9 touchdowns on Sunday night. No, I'm just kidding.
He might. But, yeah, he might. I mean, he's, you know, they don't need to get this guy revved up any more than he's going to be going back to Indianapolis. But, you know, he's done it. And now, I mean, people are going to benefit. NBC and Sunday Night Football, they love this because it's a great backstory to what could be a really good game.
No, and flip it around on the other side, though. Lost in all this is Andrew Luck's done a nice job in developing himself in Indianapolis. He had an awful game, and his team had an awful game. He had receivers dropping balls all over the place.
Right.
There's some pressure now on Andrew Luck this Sunday night to produce.
Oh, there's a ton of pressure. And I think there was anyway, but this just amped it up.
It amps it up. Sure it does. The owner kind of threw him out there, too, saying, come on. You've got to have my back, because if I'm gonna nail Peyton Manning, the last thing I need from you is three interceptions and not a victory. If Peyton Manning comes in there and humiliates the Colts, which is now highly, I wouldn't say probable, but there's a greater chance of Peyton Manning being revved up. But Andrew Luck's got some pressure on him now.
Oh, no question about it. And I think, honestly, Brad, he's amped up the pressure for Andrew Luck for the rest of his career, too.
Yeah, that's
just
true.
Saying, listen,
that's
you know,
true.
We've only had one ring here. Well, that means, Andrew Luck, you're going to need more than two Super Bowl appearances, more than one Super Bowl victory.
That's
so
right.
I wasn't real happy with that. So the pressure's on you to exceed that. I agree with you. I think that there was enough on his shoulders coming into this game, and now Jim Irsay's put more on it, and where the Broncos might say back off if they were well ahead in the fourth quarter. Maybe now it's just kind of like, let's hammer these guys because I'll show them what I am. As I said, I think Manny's position now is he's not saying anything because he's going to demonstrate on the field that what Jim Irsay said was absolutely ridiculous.
All things NFL with Clark Judge. Okay, so we're at that midpoint of the season just about, and that means some coaches are going to get whacked at some point. Are we talking Houston? I thought Carolina, when they left here after 2 weeks ago, that there might be a whacking going on in Carolina. They bounced back with a nice victory. Is Houston becoming a spot that people should look at and say, that could be a change pretty quick?
A week ago, had you asked me that question, I'd say no. Now I'd say, yeah, I think so, for this reason. Bob McNair is a patient owner. He's not the kind of guy that has a knee-jerk reaction to a two-game losing streak, a three-game losing streak. Well, now they've lost four. Worse, he got embarrassed at home. People were leaving early. That mm-hmm. catches an owner's attention. They stunk on both sides of the ball. Bad enough that the quarterbacks are throwing touchdown passes to the other team. Worse that the defense didn't show up last week. And when somebody like John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, who's been following that team for a long time, says, this is the worst Texans game I've seen in years. When he says stuff like that, you know, it's going to come back and get the coach. He better get that team straightened out and fast, because where he was supposed to be a guy to take this team to the next level,
right,
the Super Bowl, now
right,
he's got to worry about saving his career.
Well, and then we need to move over to fan behavior. You know, Calais Campbell's laying on the field. The fans are doing the wave in San Francisco. They take him off on a stretcher. The owner apologizes down in Houston. The Matt Schaub situation with T.J. Yates coming on the field. You and I have seen a lot of NFL through the years. Is fan behavior becoming more and more of an issue? Or
yeah,
is it just more media? Is there just more media and ways for people to point out, look, did you see what happened here?
Well, it's a little of both, but yeah, fan behavior is becoming an issue. I was at a Philadelphia Eagles game about 2 or 3 years ago, and the Colts were playing with Peyton Manning 3 years ago, because it was Austin Collie got sandwiched over the middle, and he was knocked out cold. Hands were in the air, and if you had seen that hit and watched him and see him lying motionless on the ground, hands in the air, there is a thought that he might be dead, ominously. We looked at that, and there was this horror. It was in Philadelphia, and you know, fans started cheering. And then my brother was at the game. He said fans around him were saying, "Hey, the guy's a, you know, he's a wimp. Get him out of the game. Get him out." And you look at this one. That was a horrific hit. And you can say on one hand, yeah, it's Philadelphia. That's, you know, they're not happy there unless they're miserable. But that kind of behavior is becoming more and more, you know, sort of problem or seen throughout the league. I mean, San Francisco, what are you doing? I mean, I covered games in San Francisco in the 90s. Fans then would not have done that. I'm going to tell you that. And yet they've had a spate of incidents there lately. And it's
right,
not just that. It's, I mean, it's, you know, stabbings and shootings and that sort of thing. And so I don't know what's going on, but someone's got to address it, and it's got to stop. And unfortunately, it's aided and abetted by the sale of alcohol, and no one's going to address that because they're making a lot of money from that. So some of it is that, but most of it's just, you know, there's a norm that's just become sort of the lowest common denominator here. What are we doing here? That's what we never used to do, and now it's becoming sort of not acceptable, but it's seeing people kind of roll their eyes and, okay, well, that's it. It shouldn't be, but you're right. I mean, it happened in Houston. You know, people cheering, Schaub gets hurt. That's happened before. I've seen that before, but now it's gone to another level. And you've seen baseball, too. I mean, people getting hurt and beaten up. I just don't get it.
Before I let you go, I got about a minute to go. Cardinals home tonight against Seattle. Seattle has lost down here 7 of the last 8 times. Carson Palmer's not been good. He's been up and down. I don't think it's time for a quarterback change out here. What about tonight's game are you looking for?
It's interesting you mention that because Seattle has a history of losing there. They have a history of losing everywhere until lately on the road. They're not a good road team, haven't been, but they're better this year than they have been. They squeaked out a victory in Carolina. We know about the Houston game. They go to Indianapolis and lose. They're vulnerable on the road. Could be vulnerable here, a short week on the road. The problem that Arizona's got is going against a really good defense. What I'm looking for is Carson Palmer to elevate his game because the turnovers last week hurt Arizona, no question about it. This is a team that will force turnovers, and you cannot try to get sneak a pass through like Richard Sherman as they did last week, tried last week. It's going to be tough for him to beat them with a pass, but you've got to have keep the offense off the field. Marshawn Lynch is effective. Try to get Russell Wilson to stay in the pocket. If you can do that, I think you can keep it close. If you can keep it close, you could steal a win. But honestly, I just don't see how it happens because I think Carson Palmer will turn the ball over, and I think they are going to be beaten by a better team. It's a better team that's coming in. It's a team, though, as I said, that's vulnerable on the road. If Palmer can reduce the mistakes and really play a flawless game, and that's, as you said, it's going to be tough. I mean, he hasn't done that. They've got a shot.
Stay well. Appreciate the time, as always.
Thanks, Brad.
Clark Judge, all things NFL. Always good to catch up with Clark around the National Football League. Up next, Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst. Brock also does a daily show in Seattle. Going to get his view on the Seahawks and Cardinals here in the Valley tonight. Big night. I think for the Cardinals, you win this game 4-3, and their next couple of games are against teams that you looked at on the surface and said, Atlanta, that'd be a loss. Houston, that'd be a loss. Well, now at the midpoint of the season, I wouldn't say that's the case. We'll also talk ASU Washington. I want to talk about Peyton Manning and all that stuff, too. That's up next with Brock Huard. I'm Brad Sussmat. And we catch up with Brock Huard. Always good with the Cardinals tonight, taking on Seattle out in Glendale. Figured, why not hit the Pacific Northwest? Because Brock can hit on a lot of topics. I've been thinking about Brock the last couple of days with this whole Jim Irsay, Peyton Manning, I don't know what it is, soap opera, because Brock would know both these parties very, very well, having been there. And, of course, the Seahawks he knows very, very well. He's going to be doing Oklahoma, Kansas this weekend, which is like getting on a plane to go see a massacre, I think. So we can hit on a lot of things with Brock Huard. Where do you want to start? Jim Irsay, tonight's game, or your massacre? Where do you want to go?
Anything you want to do, but we got to make sure we get to ASU and Washington as well, since those two are tangling in the desert. I think we probably got to start there, to be honest with you.
All
two
right.
4-2 teams
right.
in very similar circumstances, because I think in your community, there's probably an argument that this is a swing game, that if you can get this one against kind of one of the upper middle class teams, well, maybe you can get to 9 wins. And maybe, you know what, this is one of those building blocks, and you step forward and you have a good season a year ago with Todd Graham, but this now kind of takes that next step to a really good season, and then hopefully, you know what, be able to really compete for Rose Bowls in the years to come. And for Steve Sarkisian, after two very difficult losses, you're sitting at 4-2 in a season that expectations are to get to 9 wins. And frankly, you played good enough against Stanford and had every opportunity to beat them. You played Oregon to the fourth quarter, and this is a game that if you get to 9 wins, well, you got to have this one. So I think both teams, both communities, both fan bases in a very, very similar boat. And unfortunately for the Huskies, this one's in Tempe, and that's going to make it really, really hard.
You see a lot of college football running backs. Is there a better running back this season? I've seen Melvin Gordon for Wisconsin here in person. I've not seen a better back than Gordon in person, but I think I'm going to in Bishop Sankey on Saturday.
Yes. Yeah, he's really good, and this system fits very, very well to his skill set. A strong, there's not that plus trait. You don't look at it and go, ooh, that guy's got feet. Ooh, that guy's got elite burst. Ooh, that guy's just impossible to tackle. I don't know if they're, like, in baseball terms is a plus pitch, but everything he throws he has command of and over a game, and when he gets 20 to 25 to 30 and even against some opponents 40 carries against Arizona, he has full command of his arsenal. So yeah, I think he is very well rounded in that way. A TJ Yeldon is a freak of nature that I saw in person, that he's got a plus trait of physicality. I think the kid out of South Carolina has got some plus traits as far as his lateral quickness and overall movement, and so I would probably put, from a pure skill set standpoint, those two ahead of a Bishop Sankey, but he's near the top of the list.
And I saw Andre Williams at Boston College. He's pretty good, too. But
yes, yeah, he's a guy, and I think any time you can have a position where you feel like, and Steve Sarkisian has said this numerous times up here over the last 6 weeks, and it's true, a play caller will ultimately show you what his tell is, based on, well, when the situation gets more difficult and when the stakes are the highest, whose number am I calling? And in that situation this season, it's been Bishop Sankey more than anybody else.
Okay, you and I have talked in the offseason about Sarkisian and this being a big year for him. Given what's happened there the last couple of weeks, and I know it's the level of competition, is this an even bigger game for Steve Sarkisian at this point of the season for him up there?
Oh, it is. It is. Todd Graham's in year two. Todd Graham is still in that somewhat of a honeymoon stage. Yeah, Todd Graham's in that, well, you know, they've played pretty good, and I like some of the wins. I'd sure like to see them, you know, maybe get past Notre Dame or not get manhandled up in Palo Alto the way they did. But there's still an understanding, I'm sure, in Tempe of, hey, this takes some time. You can't do it in a year and a half. Well, this is year five for Steve, and this should be a situation you can go toe-to-toe with Stanford, which they did. This should be a situation where Oregon shouldn't run you out of the house, which they did. Now, you don't get either of those wins, and I think most up here, though disappointed, can understand those are two very high-caliber teams. Now, this game against ASU in year five of your program versus year two of Todd with a fifth-year senior and Bishop Sankey and Shaq Thompson and a very veteran secondary, this should be a game that you get, and therefore the stakes very, very high. Mm.
Brock, here talking college football for a couple of minutes, ESPN college football analyst. I saw you last week flying to Kentucky to see a massacre with Alabama. You've seen Alabama in person. How far and away are they the best team? It feels like, Brock, they're not far and away this year. There is a gap, but it's not nearly as large as it used to be.
Oh, I think that's very accurate, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think at the line of scrimmage on both sides, they're not particularly explosive defensively. They are strong, and they are stout, and they're going to make you beat them defensively and not give you an inch. But they don't have anybody and any war daddies in their front four that say, wow, we can't block them like they've had in the past. And then conversely, on the offensive line, you know, they may have a freshman that's going to be their starting right tackle by the end of the season, a kid they really like and that they want to build around. But you're talking about a true freshman getting significant playing time. You know, the center is an average player. The left guard has been beat up in his career. So on the point of attacking at the line, they're not what they've been. And in Oregon, I'm telling you, that Alabama team would not have won in Eugene. If they had to venture up to Eugene in the month of September, I don't think they win. Now, could Oregon go to Tuscaloosa and play a game and overcome defense and special teams and the full arsenal and everything that Alabama brings and is so well coached? Well, that would be a daunting challenge, but I think it would be a much more daunting challenge for the Crimson Tide to venture out into Eugene than it would be even for Oregon to go down south. Now, on a neutral field, that's the matchup I want to see.
Yeah, and it's like this weekend with Clemson and Florida State, Brock. Okay,
yep.
So the winner of that game, I'm looking at Ohio State saying, sorry, guys, you don't have anybody left on your schedule that's good. Michigan is not the best Michigan team by any stretch. But it doesn't feel like Clemson or Florida State has the ability to beat either Oregon or Alabama. It's those two and then the rest of the field.
Yes, but those two are really close. Ohio State, the gap's a little bit broader. Louisville will just unfortunately not know. I mean, we'll see them Friday night. And Central Florida's a team that's a good team. They're not by any stretch a great team, but they're a good team. And they have got to put on a much better performance, Louisville does, than they did last Thursday, you know, a week ago. So, you know, we've got, I think Louisville and Ohio State is going to be very hard. Clemson and Florida State now, just like that Bishop Sankey, they've got some plus aspects to their game, Brad. In fact, I think I would argue that their teams this year, especially Clemson, is better this year than they were last year. Ohio State wasn't. I don't think Louisville was. I don't think Alabama is. And Oregon's pretty darn close. But Clemson's got some plus pitches. Their offense is explosive. Their front seven's good. They got some people that are really hard to block. Florida State's secondary is the best in college football. They will lock you down and play really tough football. And Jameis Winston's a star in the making. So both of those teams have more plus and more upside, in my opinion, than a Ohio State does for sure, in a Louisville team that unfortunately the discovery process may be impossible for us to find out.
One other college question. So if you're voting today, Mariota unseed Manziel as the Heisman guy or not?
To me, they're clearly the two. They're absolutely clearly the two right now. And I would say Mariota's performance, Dave Pollack told me, I was chatting with him on Saturday and on Sunday, and he said that was the best performance in college football this season. Very few people watched it. The rating, sadly, was less than the Alabama-Kentucky rating, which is just infuriating to me for as marquee a matchup as that was in that setting. Mm-hmm. But and people didn't see 450 yards. He had four drops in that game. Mariota could have been 29 of 31 for 500 legitimate yards of total offense.
Wow.
That's the level he played at. His team's undefeated. He's avoided the critical mistakes, which, let's face it, Manziel made against Alabama, a pick six and a pick in the red zone. Those two, unfortunately, were the margin in that game, and that's why halfway point, I think Mariota would get my vote.
Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst, of course, hosts a show up in the Pacific Northwest as well. I was so excited about tonight's game that I just went right by ASU Washington, and Brock banged me over the head and brought me back into reality. So let's get into tonight's game then a little bit. Carson Palmer down here has been a disaster, and I've said he's better than what they've had in the last 3 years. Statistically, I don't have a leg to stand on in that regard. From a game management standpoint, I feel much more comfortable about where he is. What are they saying in Seattle about tonight's game and facing Carson Palmer?
They're saying you better get after him because they realize they've lost, what, 6 out of 7 times in that new stadium, and last year Kevin Cobb beat them, if you remember, and he beat them because if you give him a little bit of protection, no matter who you are and how good your Legion of Boom is, Fitz can play a little bit, and so can the supporting cast. So it's all about making sure Carson Palmer gets hit, gets moved off of his spot, and gets out of rhythm. That's the whole key with this team. If they can get pressure, then there are very few windows on time to throw against this Legion of Boom secondary that is phenomenal. They are so fun to watch. Now, if a quarterback can sit there, as Andrew Luck was able to do in the second half, and he can get into rhythm, then in their building and in their place, you know what? Carson Palmer is capable of doing some damage against you. So, to me, that's what this whole game is about. If his jersey is grass-stained, if that front can blitz, if they can get after him and get him out of rhythm, it's going to be a difficult night for the Cardinals to find a way to win.
Before I let you go, so I'm sure from afar you've been watching what's going on this week with Peyton and Ursay, and Peyton said it might sound strange, but it's an unfamiliar opponent when talking about Indianapolis, and he said he wouldn't go there and talking about Ursay and everything that Ursay has said. You played there. You were the backup there. You know what's going on with this group, so I'm really curious your view of what's happening. Is this a mind game deal by Jim Irsay?
Yes, absolutely. He's trying to make it personal, just like Tony Dungy said, and he knows what makes Peyton tick better than anybody for all of those years. It's unfortunate a little bit, and to me, as I really dissect this whole process and the drama, it's much more a shot at Bill Polian and the management than it was Peyton Manning. It's much more about, hey, everything became about Peyton Manning, and now we're trying to have, even with Andrew, more of a level of balance in the organization. I think both of those are incorrect. I think they're both swings and misses for Ursay. I think he's going to lose in the court of public opinion and even maybe in his own court there in community in Indianapolis because of what Peyton was. But yes, Jim Ursay is a little bit of a loose cannon. He's a fun guy. He's a bit of an enigma.
Yeah.
But he, to me, in this situation, is trying to get Peyton just off of his game because, you know, speaking of getting in rhythm, that guy's been as good as anybody in the history of the game the first 6 weeks of this season, and if he's in rhythm, it'll be a long night for Indy.
Yeah, it's a 700-yard, 9-touchdown night for Peyton Manning. I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out in fun, but does it make him go that much further? Is that just part of the
I don't know if you're going to extra motivate him. I know that there's going to be a level of disappointment. You know that Archie and his professional and everything that John Fox said about Peyton. You know that even if it was innuendo, even if it is competition, that Peyton would say, hey, the 14 years that I put in there to help build that stadium to get you one Super Bowl ring, put you in position for another, you take Peyton off of that team and you saw how quickly it crumbled around him. So, yeah, I think there's got to be a level of disappointment from the Mannings, but also probably a little sly grin. Like, all right, you want to go there, Jimmy? Well, let's go there, and the whole nation can watch it Sunday night.
Yeah. You doing well? You sound well. You having a good season?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to next week. I'll be back on the West Coast, and that's nice. I enjoy going down south. I enjoy the viewership, and, boy, they love their ball. But I'll have Stanford, Oregon State next week, and to stay a little closer to home is always nice.
See you. Stay well. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Anytime.
Brock Huard with us for a couple of minutes. The segment of the Brad Sussmatt Show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. I know General Manager Tim Hovick and the Ford gang are all going to be out at the Cardinal game tonight on the roster for Santan Ford. They've got Larry Fitzgerald. They've got Patrick Peterson. They've got Carson Palmer. They've got a lot of the Cardinal players that are in vehicles for Santan Ford. John Lott, the great strength coach, too. Tim Hovick does it upright. He's very involved with the whole process at Santan Ford and involved in the sports arena. It's pretty cool to see somebody do business and give back in the community. His calendar's so busy doing things day in and day out for Santan Ford and being involved in various charities. Very good group to be involved in. Your next car, your next truck, it's at Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. You can always find me on Twitter, at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. And, of course, our new website, Sports360AZ. Getting it done, things that are local in the Arizona sports scene. And the good people on White Mountain Radio. Always good to have the people White Mountain Radio with us. I'm Brad Cesmat. Thanks for being with us.